This is the Chester County Real Estate Podcast, bringing you the info you need to make your next move a great one.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Chester County Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Dominski, and this is the show that gives you the information you need to make your next move a great one. Today, I'm sitting down with Doreen Sunderland from Metro Public Adjustment. Doreen, thanks for joining me.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Metro Public Adjustment and what you do there.
Okay, great. So Metro Public Adjustment is a veteran-owned, almost 30-year-old company based up in Bensalem, Pennsylvania. We help home and business owners when they have damage to their property to make sure that they're properly compensated through the policy that they hold. That's our job, is to basically find the money in the house and so that the homeowner can do what needs to be done to remediate the issue.
So talk to me a little bit about this, because I didn't realize there was someone else involved in the process besides me and my homeowner's insurance. Where does the public adjust?
Sure. And your experience is normal. I would say 90% of people in the country don't know that a public adjuster exists. And the insurance companies like that. Okay, we don't work with the insurance company. We work against the insurance company. But what the state departments of insurance realized was that the homeowner does not have an advocate. The homeowner does not understand their policy, which is the homeowner's responsibility. Okay. So how do we help the homeowner if we're not going to do it ourselves as a political agency?
Yeah.
So they created the field public adjuster, public insurance adjuster. We can only do property casualty. That means home and business, real property. We can't do liability and auto and things like that. The public adjuster is licensed by each state. Okay, so you have to take a test. We have continuing education credits, which anyone who is in any kind of fiduciary responsibility, we've all got, whether you're a CPA or a real estate agent or insurance agent,
right.
Everybody's doing continuing education.
So there's like a state board kind of,
yes,
like real estate or other kind of certifications.
Correct.
Where, and that's maintaining professional standards and stuff like that?
Yeah, because that is part of the training. You have to have X number of professional standards or ethical process, continuing education credits, in addition to additional knowledge.
Okay, so you have to be licensed to be a public adjuster.
You have to be licensed to be a public adjuster. And that is where what a lot of people don't realize, and especially contractors and things like that, they're coming in and go, oh, well, I'll talk to your insurance company.
Uh-huh.
Well, they're not licensed to do that.
Okay.
The insurance companies don't mind because they know that that person doesn't have a license and they can still manipulate them. So,
yeah. So walk me through a little bit, because I guess, you know, I've definitely worked with, so on the real estate side of things, we're helping people buy houses. We're helping people sell houses. A lot of times when someone buys a house, if there's already damage, they're not really going to the home, homeowner's insurance. However, if they're thinking about selling at some point, that might be the case. But what in is so a lot of what like the agent does, there's not a lot of direct involvement with the claims side of things.
Correct.
But what does it look like? So when is someone what kind of claims would someone bring a public adjuster in for?
When you're referring to, you know, someone getting ready to sell their home, you know, that's always when they're really looking and they go, wait a minute, I don't remember seeing that spot of water on the ceiling or
gotcha.
Something like
yeah.
that. At that point in time, if this is something that could have happened in the prior year,
mm-hmm.
and we usually put like a 1-year time limit on it just to keep things fresh because that helps.
Mm-hmm.
There are some states that allow longer. Certain storms are allowed to be longer. So there's some variance there. So they could call us, so we can determine whether or not it's covered, whether or not it's what that problem happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
Some damages are hidden. We don't know until we open something up or until something cracks or something like that. One of the best examples was that someone was 2 weeks away from closing. They had the inspector come out. The inspector says, your roof is missing shingles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the homeowner's like, can't see it from the ground, so how would they know? And there was no
right.
leak inside. So they, of course, had to come back to the table with the realtor, renegotiate the costs because they had to reduce it. So they reduced it by about $15,000 for the new homeowner to mm-hmm. put a new roof on once they purchased it.
Okay.
Because the old homeowner doesn't have time to figure out how to put a roof on in 2 weeks and get the thing settled. So
right.
easier just to reduce the value of the sale.
Right.
The realtor then called us and said, listen, you know, this is what's happened. Is there anything you can do? Because we're almost to closing. I said, well, yeah, we can, you know, jump on it. So we got the current homeowners, the seller's mm-hmm. homeowner's insurance, had them come out after we analyzed the situation. The missing shingles, we could attribute it to a storm. A homeowner did recall, yeah, I remember seeing some shingles. I just didn't know if they were mine.
Right. That
because these storms blow hard. You know, we don't know where the damage is coming from.
Yeah.
So so we were able to do that. So they've already taken care of the buyer issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's off the table. The buyer can go fix the home because he's got an extra $15,000 less he's spending for the home.
Okay.
Okay. Even after our fee, mm-hmm. the homeowner who then sold the home, okay, and we were able to get the money relatively quickly because the insurance company understood that it's a sale going on.
Yeah.
Even after our fee, the homeowner received a check for $17,000.
Mm.
So it was actually more than what he had reduced the value of the sale for.
Okay.
Okay, and he doesn't have to fix the roof.
Right. Okay.
But it's payment for damages that have occurred. The damages were there. This is what the insurance company agreed that the damages were worth.
Right. Right.
Okay. And that was $17,000 after our fee was already taken out.
Right.
So the fee was actually larger. So it's common. It's normal. Yeah. Those are normal things that happen.
You know, from an agent standpoint, what mm-hmm. they could have done. So I'm trying to like do the math with like the dropping the price, getting the money back, and I was like, wait, this seems like you're double ending here.
Correct.
But it would be basically the equivalent of, because another option would have been, hey, we'll keep the price where it's at, but we'll give you $15,000 credit towards, which is kind of what they did. So it's like they gave him $15,000 towards the roof, and then the insurance company covered that $15,000.
Right, but we can't guarantee that a claim is going to be settled in 2 weeks. No claim settles in 2 weeks. I mean, come on. Half the time you can't even get the insurance company's agent representative out there to get it settled.
Right.
The best case scenario would be if they had called us and said, Doreen, can you come out and do a review of the house, look at the house.
Yeah.
Let us know if there's anything that can be done. So we have someone come out, look at the roof, or send a drone up to look at the roof for those adjusters who are licensed. Mm-hmm. You can get a pre-home inspection, whether there's smoke damage in the home, which nobody understands. there's different things that we see. We look at things differently because we're looking at it from what is that policy going to cover? And how is that going to help the homeowner? So now the homeowner can get the new roof. So now they don't have to reduce the value of the home. Mm-hmm. They might have to delay putting it up for sale for a month or two while we get it all straightened out.
Right.
But now both the agent, the selling agent, mm-hmm. the buyer's agent, and the seller all get to make more money.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so isn't it better to get it tidied up beforehand than have to have this panic attack
mm-hmm.
2 weeks from closing because, oh, man, I got to reduce it, and, yeah, I'm making money, but, you know, we all want to make money.
Right.
Nobody wants to reduce a sale of a home because you didn't know that there were some shingles missing.
Right, right. Yeah. So you'll come out and you'll do the pre-listing inspection.
We can do like a pre-listing. Yeah, it's not.
But basically, you'll do an inspection.
Right. Or they could hire an official home inspector to come out and say, all right, let me know if there's anything that needs to be repaired, mm-hmm. you know, so that we know what's going on before we have to have the official inspection.
Okay.
So then you don't have surprises.
Right.
Then from there, they can say, oh, okay, well, we see that we've got that. Well, maybe that's covered. The inspector's not going to know whether or not it's covered. It's not his job.
Right, right.
That's the job of two people, the claims mm-hmm. department of an insurance company and a licensed public adjuster.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only – our license gives us permission to determine if coverage is available in a policy.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of our job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that's the way it's supposed to work. It's not usually the way it works. And it's a knowledge thing. It's an education thing.
Yeah. Do people ever just send you the home inspection report?
I haven't had anyone do that too often, although I did just go to one yesterday with the home inspector. So sometimes I do get a report. And so, if I did, I would just look through it and go, okay, compare it to what your policy says. We think this, and this may be covered. Okay. We can facilitate that claim for you, or you can go on your own.
So you guys would rather go in person if possible.
Absolutely. There's so much more to be gained by being in person than virtual. Mm-hmm. And virtual sometimes is necessary. Mm-hmm. I am licensed in, I think it's 6 states right now. So obviously I'm not driving down to South Carolina just because, but I have people that also work in South Carolina. We work as a team. Mm-hmm. We can get started with the paperwork, and then I can pass that off to a team member who probably has more certifications and is well-versed in South Carolina's situation.
Okay.
Which is going to be slightly different than Pennsylvania's situation. We are licensed, the company is licensed in 48 out of 50 states. Mm-hmm. There are 2 states that do not allow public adjusting. One is Alabama and one is Arkansas.
Interesting. Okay.
Some have very restrictive policies. Every state makes its own rules, as for everything else.
Yeah.
We can also work in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Okay.
I can choose to be licensed there. There is always somebody who's licensed in all locations. Mm-hmm. And so we can, have that knowledge.
So when you hear like a horror, when the topic of insurance comes up in a group of people, someone has a horror story somewhere where their claim didn't go through, or they were pushed back, or I've heard situations where it would take years, like, and this is more automotive, where it was like clearly she was in the right. Still, I had friends like a year later, the car's still sitting in their driveway. I was like, why do you have a total car in your driveway? It's a year later. They're like, the insurance company. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So when it comes to homeowners insurance, so do you hear these horror stories and you're like, oh, you didn't have a public adjuster, did you? We should talk.
Yeah. Right. A lot of times they don't. And there can be things go wrong even when you have a public adjuster.
Yeah.
But then you're starting to push into bad faith when you do need to get a lawyer involved.
Right.
But having the public adjuster means that you've got all the they should have all the documentation throughout the entire process. So when it gets to the point where we're at a complete stalemate, nobody's moving forward, the client has to be willing to let a lawyer take over. Mm-hmm. It's no more work on the homeowner's part, but the lawyer takes over. He's already got now the stack of paperwork, mm-hmm. Every file that is all communication. And this is when you're using a good public adjuster. Mm-hmm. They keep details on everything, every email, every text, every recorded conversation, if there are, so that because the insurance company isn't going to share that in discovery. Mm-hmm. There's challenges. Then if it needs to go to legal, that's the last resort, mm-hmm. Because nobody really wants to do that.
Right.
But we have lawyers who even participate in our continuing education, mm-hmm. So that we know where they're coming from.
So you're always working on behalf of the homeowner, correct? Because I'm also wondering, like, who are the other stakeholders in a property that wants to see that this thing, stays valuable over time. And I'm wondering, does the mortgage company ever step in there and say, like,
I was afraid you're gonna ask. this is like the best kept secret when it comes to a claim.
Yeah.
Is that mortgage companies have written themselves into the claim process.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's their collateral. It's their,
they have a vested interest in this house being saleable.
Right. And so I kind of feel like the insurance, to a degree, the mortgage company and the insurance company are going to be a little bit adversarial, because the insurance company wants to be like, oh, no, that's just a new coat of paint. Well, if you need some paint, we'll give you some paint. And the mortgage company is like, no, that's damage. And if you don't take care of it, our collateral is going to be falling apart down the road.
Unfortunately, the mortgage company pushes more on the homeowner and not the insurance company.
Okay.
That's from what we can see. So this is
interesting.
This is what happens. When you have a claim, mm-hmm. okay, and there's a mortgage on the home, mm-hmm. okay. Now, if you don't have a mortgage, this step is forgotten,
because
you don't have a mortgage company. The homeowner is the only person with vested interest. Mortgage company has a vested interest. So the mortgage company, somewhere in your mortgage paperwork, have written in that if you have a claim that exceeds XYZ dollars, mm-hmm. or from $0, and every mortgage company is different. Mm-hmm. We will, either send you the check, or we were going to monitor the process.
Okay.
So that comes in many different forms. Well, what ends up happening is that the check comes, it has the homeowner's name on it, it has a Metro Public Adjustment on it, because that's how we only get paid from a settlement check, mm-hmm. only on a contingency. Then it has the mortgage company's name on it.
Okay.
So now, because those are all the people with vested interest. Mm-hmm. So now the homeowner has to sign off. Metro has to sign off. Send it to the mortgage company. They deposit the money and say, okay, here's 25%. Now, this is a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. This is not for every company. Here's 25%. and let us know when you get to 50% done. Okay? And the homeowner's going, what? Why can't I get the rest of the money? Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, we're not getting the rest of the money either, you know, because the mortgage company is holding on to it. So, and this can drag on. I'm having an issue with someone with a fire out in Nevada, and we've gone past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And most of it is the mortgage company withholding funds.
Interesting.
They've slowed it down because they weren't giving the homeowner enough percentage mm-hmm. for him to for a contractor to be confident about doing the work.
Right.
Because the contractor's like, wait a minute, this is a complete rebuild. I'm expecting $400,000 or $500,000.
Yeah.
And you're telling me the insurance company gave you $100,000 and that pays for the demo.
Right.
Okay, and now we haven't started building yet.
Yeah.
So we're in that fight. So we have an office set up where we're calling the mortgage company every 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
We do the same thing with insurance companies. Call them every 10 days because that's the legal number. Every 10 days, when you make
the legal
request,
minimum?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maximum. Maximum. The insurance company is supposed to respond to any request in 10 days.
Okay.
Okay? So when they don't respond in 10 days, we call them on day 11 and say, hey, you didn't respond to us.
Okay.
And this can go on. But this is also building a case if it goes to legal.
Mm-hmm.
How many times did we have to contact them for information or for a response or for a decision?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because at some point the court's going to be like, you couldn't call them back?
Right.
You know, but this is normal. This is normal practice. So we come across homeowners with this problem constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I call them and call them and call them, and they don't call back. I said, well, number one, they do have 10 days to call you back. And I said, but that starts every time you call them.
Oh, interesting.
So they use it so, of course, the insurance companies are using it to their advantage.
Right.
You know, and a homeowner doesn't know that. We don't read legal stuff.
Right.
You don't read your mortgage paperwork.
Right.
You know, you don't read your insurance paper. You trust the agent who sold it to you. Unfortunately, the agent's not involved in the claim process. Mm-hmm. They're not licensed to be involved in the claim process. Now, many of them will work really hard to say, call up the claim. Can you please help my client? You and I both know this is covered. But they cannot override the claims department. They can't really negotiate against their own company. Okay, because remember, the rule is the insurance company is to collect premiums and they make money when they don't pay claims. Okay, so there's an incentive to not pay a claim. But then you have the really great agents who care.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't care about your bottom line. I don't care about my bottom line. I care about my client.
Like, did you see The Incredibles?
Oh, of course. When I saw that, I'm like, my eyes are bulging out. I'm like, that is perfect. That's exactly it. Because I know those guys.
Yeah.
I know those adjusters, the company adjusters that come out and go, yep, I think this is covered. This is covered. And they're agreeing with the homeowner. And usually it's before we get to, they agree with the homeowner. We think these things are covered. Mm-hmm. Then they go back and the claims department's like, no.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, or we're paying this or we're not paying that and things like that. So it happens all the time.
So I guess the obvious thing is you had a big storm and there's some storm mm-hmm. damage. Before you call the insurance company, call a public adjuster, correct?
You can do that.
What other kind of stuff would be something that someone, you know, would be a reason for someone to call? Like my hose spigot broke. I probably don't need to call a public adjuster for that.
Why not?
I figured it's just like a little thing that just needs to be replaced. It's probably my fault.
It's possible.
I don't know.
And sometimes I'll come out and say, yeah, you're not going to get enough money out of it to get over your deductible. And when it comes to using a public adjuster, you've got to get far enough out for both of us to make enough money to make it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of that initial estimate is this going to be worth it before we ever report to an insurance company. So this mm-hmm. is what people don't realize is when you call the insurance company and say, I'm not sure if I have a claim, is this covered or is that covered? Whether you have a claim or not, they mark it as you having a claim.
Yeah, okay.
Because I have a client who we went to her. She had a pipe break in the house. She had called the insurance company. They're like, well, you have 4 claims on the list. And she goes, no, I don't. She goes, yeah, you called on this date, this date, this date. And she was a first-time homeowner.
Yeah.
She had called the claims department to ask what constitutes a claim. But she never had a claim. But they assumed she did. So the insurance company's waiting for her to call back and say, yeah, I've actually got damage.
Interesting.
And they never put out any money out. But now they've penalized. They're questioning her unreasonably because she called and asked questions.
Not to veer too far out of our lane, but is that where maybe she, if she had a good insurance agent, like...
Yes, then she could have called the agent and said, what do you think about this? And the agent knows a lot.
Yeah.
You know, especially the ones who have really studied up and stuff like that. They don't always know everything because sometimes there's things that are hidden in policies and the agent's like, they didn't talk about that in class.
Right.
So we kind of help. So we can prevent a wrongful claim denial.
Okay.
But or having someone submit a claim that's not actually covered by their policy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we don't charge for that. There's no fee for that because I haven't earned you any money yet.
Mm-hmm.
We only get paid when there's money coming from the insurance company. So I'm happy to go out and say, yes, that's covered. No, that's not covered. I think it's going to be high enough. And Metro Public Adjustment is one of the few public adjusting firms that will do a small claim.
Okay.
Now, when I say a small claim, it usually starts around $5,000. If it's less than $5,000, neither of us are going to get enough money out of it to make it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
The cost to do a $5,000 or $10,000 claim for our personnel costs and things like that, the paperwork is the same amount as if you're doing a larger claim like $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now we're not going to get paid the same amount.
Right.
So, but we feel that everybody needs to have an advocate. Everyone should be defended.
Yeah.
Okay, and when you leave it up to the insurance company, that insurance adjuster is not your insurance adjuster. That is the insurance company's adjuster, mm-hmm. and that's who pays him.
Right.
We get paid from the homeowner, so our incentive is to get as much as the claim will allow, as much as the process will allow.
So I do want to address a couple like myths about the industry. So, and I'm sure you hear this stuff a lot, and I think I've heard people say like, yeah, but that's less money that you're going to get for your claim. Mm-hmm. Now, the public adjuster is going to take their fee,
sure.
and you're going to get less money, and that might not even cover what you need it to cover. Have you heard that before?
Oh, all the time. That's like the first objection.
Yeah.
Number one,
that's
it does.
Objection.
Exactly. Number one, it's not like car insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, car insurance is what I would call a zero sum game. Very little room for adjustment, although I have done my own adjustment on my own car insurance claim. It's based on receipts. Here's the receipt for the repair of the car. Here's what the car is worth. Here's what your rental cost. Here's your whatever those things are. Okay?
Yeah.
So we call that a zero-sum game
and
because
I think a lot
they're paying the receipt.
And I think a lot of people think homeowners insurance works the same way.
And
where
it doesn't.
It's like, oh, sidewalk needs to be replaced. Just send them the receipt and you'll cover it.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's what people think.
Yeah.
That's what insurance companies want you to think.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to believe that. The truth of the matter is that it is payment for damages that have occurred. And the numbers that the insurance company uses to estimate what that should cost have nothing to do with you with what you can find for a contractor. Okay. Now, they get around that and say, oh, well, send us three estimates. Well, what happens when you send three estimates to the insurance company? Which one do they pick?
The lowest.
Yeah. It's all 100% of the time. That's an easy one. But that maybe that's not the right person for you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they will push and say, well, use our, we'll send you a contractor. Well, maybe you don't like that person.
Mm-hmm.
You should not, you are not required to use anybody but who you choose.
Mm-hmm.
The policy does not say you must use our preferred or choose from our preferred list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. People will ask me for, like a list. And I said, I do not have a preferred list. Here is a list of contractors that I think might work for you.
Mm-hmm.
Or, this guy had worked really well with this company or, whatever it happens to be. So we give referrals, but I'm not saying you have to use them,
mm-hmm.
Because that would be inappropriate. Homeowners got the money. Our job is to get them their budget.
Right.
Okay. The budget will always be greater. Okay. So there was a study done, I don't remember what year it was, but we call it the OPAGA report. If I remember correctly, it's the Office of Program Policy and Government Accountability Office or something like that. Anyway, it's down in Florida. It's a Government Accountability Office in the State Insurance Department.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance companies, after a bad year of hurricanes, and this is probably at least – it's more than 5 years ago, they sent about 50 or 60,000 claim documentation to this policy office. Mm-hmm. And said, would you please prove that public adjusters don't get enough money for their clients and that we do a better job of that?
Right.
Okay, because that's all about – that's what it is how much – can I get enough to fix this? So this is a government accountability, so they're not supposed to be swayed by either or. You know, public adjusters don't even know this is happening. This is coming straight from the insurance industry. Well, what they found was that, and I have a quote for this. It's they found that on average, public adjusters earn 574% more than the insurance companies offer.
Okay.
Okay. So if I'm getting you five times what the insurance company is going to offer you on average.
Right.
Can you afford my fee?
Right. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. Okay. I haven't had, since the deductible is already taken out, mm-hmm. prior to any funds coming in, if I got you enough money to cover everything after our fee, then you don't have to put your deductible out. Mm-hmm. Okay. And a lot of people will use the roofer, whatever the insurance company pays plus your deductible. Well, what if your roof cost $12,000 to replace? The contractor got $20,000. Mm-hmm. And then you paid him your $2,000 deductible. Mm. Is that correct? Does that sound fair? No, because you paid for the policy.
Right.
So you should get whatever the overdue. That roofer is not going to tell you right. that he got more money than he needed to do that roof.
Right.
So what we want homeowners to do is say, okay, I'm going to find who I want to use.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get competitive bids mm-hmm. and determine which company I'm going to use. Okay, and this is I know what my budget is. I'm not telling him what my budget is mm-hmm. because I've gotten my budget from the insurance company. And then if I want to do some upgrades, maybe I have a little bit of extra left for upgrades.
Okay, right.
So 9 times out of 10, there's going to be more money than you need to do that. So we did a large roof down in Kennett. After our fee, after the contractor got paid his full bill. Mm-hmm. The homeowner had $2,000 left in their pocket, did not put out their deductible because it didn't have to. Mm-hmm. It was already reduced from the settlement. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, whether it's $200 more or not, that doesn't matter. Another service that we offer is what we call a claim settlement double check. So a lot of times someone will get that money and they'll be like, well, it really wasn't enough from mm-hmm. the insurance company. I wonder if there's a way to get more. Or they're tired of pushing and begging, or they're just not sure. We will do a claim settlement double check to find out, did you get all the money mm-hmm. or not? If you did not get all the money, and we pursue that and we go after that and we get more money for you, then we only get paid on the amount that we earned for the homeowner. We don't get paid on what the homeowner already received on their own. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that's a very large part of our business, actually.
So – another question that I have, I think we had a storm at some point last year or so, and I had a friend who we were joking. There's this, like, I don't know what to call these people, but they're basically roofing companies yep. that will send guys, like, I don't know, they rent out a hotel and they just flood the area.
Yeah, catastrophic. There can be catastrophic adjusters coming around.
Yeah.
And they work for insurance companies.
Well, this was like a roofing company.
Oh, yeah, the roofing companies.
They come in after the hailstorm and they say, sign these documents. We're going to do everything for you and we're going to put a new roof on and stuff. I call them storm chasers ambulance chasers and whatnot.
Yeah.
But so is that – are they basically like a public adjuster and a roofing company? Or is that just the roofing company?
I have not yet come across one that is a public adjuster and a roofer at the same time.
Okay.
Now, they can be.
There's nothing
stopping
them.
I could go to a roofing company and say, listen, I'm a public adjuster.
Yeah.
Anything I sign for you, I sign for me. You know, legally I could do that as long as I'm open with the homeowner.
Yeah.
That I'm getting paid from multiple streams. You know, we've already checked with the legal on that. But yeah, they could do that if they were. But so many times they're like, nah, I don't need to do that. I can just get the money because all they're looking at is the roof.
Right.
Well, what if there's siding damage, but you're only going to do on roof? Mm-hmm. What if there's internal water damage? What if, you know, whatever's happening on the roof has gotten down into the insulation? So as a public adjuster, we want to look at the entire scope of what has occurred.
Okay.
Okay.
So before you sign those, before you answer the door and just sign the kid's papers, that's going to give him a nice commission check, it's probably talk to a local public adjuster.
Right. Contact a public adjuster and say, listen, there was apparently hail damage in my area. Mm-hmm. Can you check?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. We can look at the hail maps and then we need to see what the house looks like. And then this is bringing a new thing that that insurance companies are doing, and I don't know how roofers by themselves are going to get over on it. Mm-hmm. They're calling this cosmetic or mechanical damage.
Okay.
Okay, that like if you have hail damage on your roof, they're going to deny it, saying, oh, well, we don't cover cosmetic damage. It's like, what? You know. So
yeah, there's no brand name on that roof. The roof is there for a specific reason. It's I don't go around bragging to people, and then
they'll send out a structural engineer. And I don't have a problem with the structural engineer, but they don't all have roofing certification.
Okay.
If they don't have the engine, there's an engineering certification created by the insurance industry that certifies someone to be able to properly analyze damage to a roof.
Okay.
And what has happened to the durability of the roof, the longevity of the roof. So all of our, we call them field adjusters, are certified in this engineering. A structural engineer usually is not, unless they have taken that course. In addition, but people hear, oh, structural engineer, well, that, they must know about all structure. No, they know about the structure that they specialized in.
Right.
So then my next question is, well, was he certified in HEG certification for roofing? And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was like, well, let's find out. Because if he's not, then he's not an expert.
Right.
So how about I bring an expert in? You know, because that's what's important. That's how we were able to overcome many objections from the insurance company.
Okay. Now, for a final question, out of curiosity, do you work with people who have investment properties and second homes and vacation homes too? Does the insurance company look at a rental property different than a primary residence, or is there any like different like process in that?
There's some different processes. So there's eight different kinds of policies you can purchase.
Okay.
Okay. And some are just for homes that where it's primary residence. Mm-hmm. Some are for renters only. You know, for the renter's personal possessions.
Right.
Some are for condo where it's a combination. Mm-hmm. Of, okay, the condo association has a policy for the exterior. You own from drywall in. Okay, well, does that include the drywall or not the drywall?
Good to know.
Right, so these are questions that
– Or the electrical, which is in between.
So, you know, okay, is it from studs in or siding in? You know, so – and we're trying to figure out what all those numbers are. So there's many different levels. So – and then we're taught to go in and look. Some companies have gone away from those industry norms. Mm-hmm. They're ISO forms, and now they've created new things which have less coverage. So you know we take a lot of classes internally to educate ourselves on how all this comes together. So when someone has an investment property, especially if it's going to be a rental, an Airbnb, or a second home, okay, it might be listed as what they call a dwelling policy, which means it's only the structure. Personal property inside is not part of that. Except for maybe the appliances. Mm-hmm. So the renter will have their insurance that insures their personal property. And some, I have to go live someplace else for a few weeks or a month or whatever while this is getting repaired.
Right.
Okay. So the property owner owns a policy that covers all the structural and every the walls, floors, ceilings, the whole nine yards, plus appliances would be, like I said, would be considered personal property. And if it's a furnished apartment, than pre-furnished by the owner, then there's that. So there's always all these little nuances, and agents are really good at making sure that you've got those nuances figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when there's a claim, that's when we come in and go, okay, for the condo association, this is your responsibility, and this is the condo association's responsibility. We only represent the homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
The condo might be like, well, no, we don't. We do our own thing. And that's their choice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, yeah, there are a lot of nuances. The biggest problem is, like, second homes where nobody's there for long periods of time.
Okay.
Okay? Because then they start calling it vacancy. And a vacant property is usually one that's been empty for at least 60 days.
Okay.
And if it's just a hunting cabin.
I was going to say a hunting cabin.
Exactly. Now that's empty all but a couple weeks out of the year.
Right.
But there are policies that will still cover it. Like say all of a sudden it burns down or a tree falls on it or lightning strike or whatever that is.
Yeah.
You can still insure these properties. As long as the insurance company knows in advance that this is going to be vacant majority of the time, then they can assign a level of risk to that.
Okay.
Because that's their job is to risk manage. They know that occasionally something will happen. Same thing with the renter's policy. Okay, we know we're going to have strangers in there, good or bad. We know that that's at this level of risk.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of their analysis. Okay, but there should be a policy available for everything. A bigger concern to me is when someone has a you know, maybe they've gone through financial difficulty, they stopped paying their mortgage, which also means they may have stopped paying for their homeowner's insurance because that's all tied into the mortgage.
Right.
The mortgage company says, well, we can't have that. So what they will do is that even though you might, and this is, would have been big over COVID, even though you're not paying for it, we're going to put an insurance policy on it, and it's just for the structure because that's all the mortgage company cares about is your structure. Mm-hmm. They don't care about you.
Right.
And then the homeowner forgets. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they got out, they got their job, got another job, and then they're like, oh, well, I still have insurance. Look at that. It says I have insurance. Never realizing that that's not for them. That's for the mortgage company.
Okay.
And if their house burns down, none of their stuff is covered. Mm-hmm. Only the structure is covered. And mm-hmm. they're out of luck. Because the money isn't coming to them. It's going to the mortgage company.
Yeah, I was going to say, and it's not even
right. Right. The mortgage company gets the money. They're not the beneficiaries. I mean, what the mortgage company is going to do with that money. They're not rebuilding the house. They're paying the mortgage off.
Right.
Okay, so you have massive losses. You can't be guaranteed that you're going to the mortgage company is going to give you money.
Yeah.
We've got enough problems with them holding on to money. So those are the people I really want to find those people and let them know that, listen, there are some really great – and we always recommend an insurance broker mm-hmm. because they can shop 10, 20, 30 different companies to find the best bang for your buck. Okay, if you're saving 15% or more, you may not be saving anything in the long run, okay? Discounts are there for a reason. So we always encourage people to find a really great insurance broker who cares more about you and who can shop from a variety. Competition is still good in the insurance industry. It's not a zero-sum game.
Right, right.
You know, that's one of the services we offer.
Awesome. So, all right. So, if someone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can get in touch with you if they want to get, if they want to have you come out, check something out, if they have a question?
They can call me at 484-580-9120.
Okay.
Or they can email me at Doreen, D-O-R-E-E-N, at metropa.com.
Okay. Great. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Chester County Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by RE/MAX Ace Realty, serving buyers and sellers in the Chester County area. Subscribe for new episodes at acerealtypa.com/podcast. And you can find us on Facebook, YouTube, and wherever podcasts are found.